Wide Sargasso Sea emerged as a literary revolution when Jean Rhys finally published it in 1966 after years of struggle. What drove her to write this slim but powerful novel? A nagging question that had haunted her since 1907. Who was the madwoman in Charlotte Bronte's Jane Eyre, and what was her story? The result transformed literature by giving voice to Bertha Mason, reimagined as Antoinette Causeway, a complex Creole woman caught between worlds in post-emancipation Jamaica. Set in the 1830s after slavery's abolition, this novel explores the devastating psychological effects of colonialism, patriarchy, and displacement through Antoinette's tragic journey from Caribbean heiress to the infamous madwoman in the attic. Through lush, dreamlike prose and shifting perspectives, Rhys creates a haunting meditation on identity and belonging that challenges us to reconsider the stories we've accepted as truth. They say when trouble comes close, ranks, and so the white people did. But we were not in their ranks. These opening lines establish Antoinette's precarious position in Jamaica's racial hierarchy. As white Creoles, they exist in limbo, rejected by the black community who despise them as former slave owners, and by white colonists who view them as tainted by their tropical birthplace. Young Antoinette lives with her beautiful French Creole mother, Annette, and disabled brother, Pierre, at Coulibri, their decaying plantation. Their isolation is complete. Neighbors commit suicide, their horse is poisoned, and Antoinette's only friend, Tia, ultimately betrays her. When Annette remarries wealthy Englishman Mr. Mason, their fortunes briefly improve, but his colonial arrogance intensifies local resentment. The inevitable explosion comes when a mob burns Coulibri. Pierre is fatally injured, and their pet parrot Coco, whose wings Mr. Mason had clipped, plunges to a fiery death, foreshadowing Antoinette's future. Have you ever felt like you don't belong anywhere? Antoinette's childhood trauma stems from this fundamental displacement, a girl without a people or home, forever marked as other. After the fire destroys her home, Antoinette finds refuge at a Catholic convent school. Behind high walls, she experiences her only period of stability. The nuns teach about female saints who rejected worldly pleasures, while paradoxically preparing girls for marriage, that supposed safety awaiting proper young women. Here, Antoinette forms meaningful relationships with adult women, especially Sister Marie Augustine, who provides the maternal tenderness Annette never could. Yet even in this sanctuary, she remains haunted by dreams of being pursued through dark forests by a hateful stranger, unconscious premonitions of her future with Rochester. When Mr. Mason announces it's time for her to leave, promising safety through marriage, she feels instinctive dread. The convent's emphasis on female purity and sacrifice prefigures Antoinette's trajectory toward martyrdom, as the nun's teachings that true happiness exists only in the afterlife prove prophetic for her. The narrative shifts dramatically when we see Antoinette through her husband's eyes, Edward Rochester from Jane Eyre, not a romantic hero, but a calculating second son who married her solely for her fortune. "I have not bought her, she has bought me, or so she thinks," Rochester reflects bitterly. Their passionate honeymoon at Granbeau deteriorates as Rochester's discomfort with the Caribbean grows. The landscape becomes menacing and unreal to his English sensibilities. Too much blue, too much purple, too much green. This cultural disconnect poisons their relationship. Initially captivated by Antoinette's exotic beauty, Rochester grows suspicious when Daniel Causeway claims to be her half-brother and alleges madness in her family. Rather than confronting these claims, Rochester withdraws, viewing her through racial stereotypes. When Antoinette obtains a love potion from Christoffen, it backfires. After being drugged, Rochester sleeps with her, but then cruelly beds her servant, Amelie, within earshot, revealing the intersection of racial and sexual power dynamics in colonial settings. Isn't it striking how quickly desire turns to disgust without cultural understanding? Christophine, Antoinette's former nurse who practices Obeya, Caribbean folk magic, is one of the novel's most compelling characters. Given to Annette as a wedding present, her presence highlights slavery's lingering influence on relationships. Despite her subordinate position, she maintains fierce independence. When Rochester tries to understand Antoinette, Christophine challenges him. She is Creole girl, and she have the sun in her. Tell her she is pretty like pretty self, and then she believe you, but she not content. This exposes Antoinette's vulnerability, her need for validation from someone incapable of truly accepting her. Through Obeya, Christophine represents power outside colonial systems. When threatened with police, she responds defiantly, "No police here. This is free country, and I am free woman." Yet her power has limits. When Antoinette seeks help after Rochester's betrayal, Christophine must acknowledge she cannot protect her from the legal system, granting Rochester control over his wife and fortune, revealing how colonial structures ultimately trumped resistance available to women of color. Rochester systematically erases Antoinette's identity by renaming her Bertha, despite her protest. "You are trying to make me into someone else, calling me by another name." This renaming constitutes psychological violence, echoing colonial practices of renaming slaves and indigenous peoples. Having Antoinette declared insane and confined in England demonstrates how madness conveniently diagnosed women who defied patriarchal control. Rochester later admits, "I did not love her. I was thirsty for her, but that is not love. She was a stranger to me," revealing both sexual objectification and cultural othering. Rochester views Antoinette through racial and cultural prejudice. His actions, financial control, emotional manipulation, sexual exploitation, and imprisonment, mirror Britain's colonial relationship with the Caribbean. The novel suggests Antoinette's madness isn't inherited, but produced by trauma, rejection, and displacement. Through dreams, fragmented memories, and erratic behavior, we witness her psyche fragmenting under oppression. How many mad women simply refused erasure? The novel's final section shows Antoinette confined to Thornfield Hall's attic under Grace Poole's watch. She experiences England as a cardboard house with cardboard people and without mirrors loses her sense of self. "There is no looking glass here, and I don't know what I am like now. What am I doing in this place, and who am I?" Despite Rochester's attempts to erase her identity, Antoinette preserves fragments of selfhood through memory and objects from her past, especially her red dress. When holding it, she compares it to fire and recalls something important she must do. The dress symbolizes her Caribbean identity and feminine power that Rochester tried to suppress. Unlike Jane Eyre's passive victim, Rice's Antoinette actively plans her escape. In her third dream, she sets fire to Thornfield Hall before jumping toward her childhood friend Tia. Upon waking, she takes Grace's keys while the guard sleeps and walks down a dark passage with a candle, declaring, "Now at last I know why I was brought here and what I have to do." This ambiguous ending preserves Antoinette's agency, suggesting we might still find power to write our own endings even in darkness.